today's topic I'm going to be talking about, which is a very important idea. It's about pushing oneself. Generally, this is the idea. Pushing yourself further than you can imagine. I know this is America and no one wants to hear this. You know, like, I have enough in my life. Why would anyone tell me this? But we all need the extra push. And this is it. Obviously, there's times where we got to take a step back. You know, Jewish dancing, they say, is three steps forward, one step back, three steps forward, one step back. So that's how it has to be in life also. You're moving forward, but once in a while, you take a step back. Of course, because that's healthy. But we're talking about pushing yourself more than you can imagine. And that's really the theme of this study. So it's based on a statement in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, fourth chapter. And the Mishnah says like this, Rav Yishmael said that if you study Torah just for the sake of learning it for yourself, so that's great, you'll be wise. And it's good to study Torah so you become wise. We'll talk about that. But then he says, if you do it in order to teach someone else, halomed al menat lelamed, so then you'll have the power to also learn and teach. And if somebody learns with the idea not only to teach, but his idea is to do, to live by the values of the Torah, then he will actually teach, he will know, he will do, he will keep it, and he will keep doing it. Okay, so there's somebody who could do much, much more than what you think. Like, people can look at you know, me and Shira, and they say to us, this happens a lot, I don't think, they just don't know what really happens. But they say to us, I don't know how you guys do it. And I say, it's Shira, and that's it, because I'm right. It really is all her. But really, people ask us, so I don't know how you guys do it. You've got Taco Tuesday, then you have this, and you have this event, and then a party, and you've got your kids also to look after. And there is There's a belief in Judaism that there's the responsibility a person takes on himself is there's a certain level of blessing that you will have to fill that responsibility. If you really take on a responsibility, you do not know the power of a human being, and you will have that power to complete and do that responsibility. So that's the theme of what I'm going to talk about today based on this Mishnah. There's a famous analogy that really gives us the idea of this. Somebody tells his wife, I'm too tired, I don't have time, I can't, I'm tired, I need to lie down. And he goes to bed, he starts lying down, he's got a headache, can't do anything today, nothing, I'm in bed. No one talked to me. He lies in bed with a massive headache, All of a sudden, he hears a crazy noise outside. Boom! He hears the noise, boom, the guy's up, running across his house, running around, doing, where's it coming from, what happened? All of a sudden, a person that had zero energy and truly felt like he's tired, end of day, I have zero energy. You hear something, you're on this safety mode, and you suddenly have so much more energy than you ever imagined. That's the human mind. A lot of what we go through is to do with our feelings and our desires and our mind. And if we are able to switch the mind, then our movement and our mannerisms, right? It says, the way you want to go is how you will really go at the end. So, you know, we look at it like, yes, when I started this job, and Shira would say the same, when we started this job, every small thing, we're like, how am I going to do it? How am I going to do it? How are we going to host the Shabbat? And then how are we going to have a class? And how are we going to have a group of people? And I would be ill for like 2 days before because what am I going to talk about? And how am I going to excite them? Or like, you know, I'm still ill till today thinking about what am I going to talk about? But that's another discussion. But when we started, this we did 10 years ago. The first time we started is like, how am I going to communicate with all these people? How am I going to relate to them? I'm not that type. I'm actually by nature pretty shy. I know it doesn't look like it anymore. But that's how it started off. And we would talk about these things. Every small thing would be such a struggle for us. But today, it's like, we could do more. We can actually take on more. Because that's how life is. You take on responsibility. You have a family. You say to yourself, I don't know how I'm going to have a marriage and a life and that commitment. But then actually, once you actually take on that responsibility, I know It's a hard one, because once you take this responsibility, it's hard to go back, you know? So it takes a lot of faith and courage to take on the responsibility. But we believe, as long as I'm doing the right thing, and it's within the realm of Torah, or the values that we stand for, you will have what we call in Hebrew, si'ata dishmaya, it's actually Aramaic, the help from heaven, a help that would actually make it a reality. And that's how Jews have survived throughout our history. We did not come victims to our problems. We went through the Holocaust. Jews straight away, immediately, got out, went to wherever they went to and built. And they struggled. It wasn't easy. And the way that we did it is obviously through the help of God, but also through the need and the person just taking on that responsibility, saying, I'm doing this. I'm going to move forward. I'm going to leap into this position. And then things will unfold in its right way. Obviously, there are challenges that come our way, but that is the overarching theme. That's the overall theme, that if I do what's right, I know and I truly believe within that that's going to be the best thing for me, even if it faces and comes with challenge. And I will have the help of God to overcome the challenges that face my way. So that's how we do it. That's how people who have 3 kids say to themselves, I don't know how that family does it with 5. And the people with 5 say, I don't know how that person does it with 9. And then, but they, you know, we don't, and I'm joking. But really, what happens is, when you have those children in your life, and each one is a world, you get the help from God to actually do it. And it happens. And it's something that you could have never fathomed when you were a little kid. It's like, even with, everyone here will agree, when you were in school, you said, how will I ever be a lawyer? How will I ever be a... And then it came into reality. How will I ever move to the United States and make my life a new life here? How will I... Right? Whatever it is that's your dream that you had as a little kid, and then you just did it. And if it was the right thing to do, you had the help. And most times, a lot of those dreams that you thought was impossible actually came in reality. So we have a true and deep belief as Jews that בדרך שאדם רוצה ללך מוליכין אותו. If you really want something, you will get the help to make that happen. And they say someone who takes the responsibility of a community, he'll have the energy to cope with the community. You take the responsibility to look after a family, you will have the help to look after that family. There's a rabbi in Israel. His name is Rabbi Grossman, Yitzchak David Grossman. I talk about him a lot. He has 6,000 orphans under his name. That's a tremendous number, but it didn't start that way. It started off with the Yom Kippur War. He was living in Meir Shearim in Jerusalem, and he said, there's enough rabbis here with beards and peyot. I'm going up to the north. He went to Migdal HaEmek. Hey, see, we have the power. I can do this. So he went to Migdal HaEmek. It worked. This is the first time for everything. Way more interesting than me. Come on. Come on, come back. So, I'm being a bit proud. But I wouldn't have been able to do this. Like 10 years ago, I would have freaked out. Like literally, I wouldn't. Okay, so in Migdal HaEmek, Rav Grossman now has 6,000 students, 6,000 orphans under his name. He started off with 13, besides for his wife and his family, and it grew and grew and grew until he has an empire, a massive institution. He took a whole part of a city called Migdal Or. It's in Migdal HaEmek, and it's an area in the north of Israel, and he has a whole section of that area called Migdal Or, which is his new little town. And he built with 6,000 orphans under his name, and people there have been looked after him. He paid for their wedding. Unbelievable. They wrote a book about him. He's still alive. They wrote a book about him whilst he's alive called The Living Legend. Wow. Because he's such a great person. So how did he manage to do that? And then now he runs more things. He got that position, then he started opening a operation that's done in every single prison, where rabbis go into prisons all over Israel and they help inmates to overcome their challenges and become better people. So he does that also. And then it spread to more. He's got a talk show. He has a radio that he talks on all the time. He's like nonstop. How did that happen? The answer is you take on responsibility. You're given the power to do more. And that's the way a person should be in life. Also, not say, I have so much already. How on earth can I do more? Actually face the challenge instead of running away from the challenge and saying, I can't do this. This isn't crazy. Face it. Look at your challenge and say, what else can I do extra? And suddenly, instead of it being a burden on you, you're the one that's empowering that challenge in your face. You're the one that's in control of all the challenges and you can do more. It's phenomenal. So that's the approach that we should have. And we truly believe it on condition that I'm doing the right thing. So how do I know this? Where do we have this from? We have this from Moses. So Moses, we all know, couldn't talk properly. So for 7 days, God's saying, come on, you got to save the Jewish people. I know you can do it. 7 days. And what does Moses say? Moses says to God, Lo ish dvarim anochi, I'm not a man of words, I can't speak. And he couldn't. Our rabbis say that his tongue, all the letters that are dependent on the tongue, he couldn't say, and the ones that dependent on the teeth. So he couldn't say S, Sh, La, right? There's letters that are dependent on the Lashon and on the teeth. He couldn't say those letters. So that's very hard. Imagine being a leader of the Jewish people, going to the king, Pharaoh, who's like a living god, and saying, hey, let my people out, you know, like it's not going to work, or whatever it was. That's really crazy. And he says, no, I can't do this. I cannot speak. And he says to God at the seventh day, he says, Lo ish dvarim anochi. Yesterday I couldn't speak. God, you asked me yesterday, I said I can't speak. You asked me 2 days ago, I couldn't speak. And 3 days ago, and from the time you started talking to me, which is 7 days, I can't speak. Kikvad peh, it's hot, it's heavy, my mouth is heavy. Ukvad lashon, and my tongue is heavy on me. I can't. So what does God say back to him? God says back to him, Mi sam peh l'adam, who gave a mouth to a person in the first place? Where does a mouth come from in the first place? Or mi asum ilem, who makes someone dumb, or deaf, or able to speak, or able to see, or blind? I am God. I have the power to do everything. So I am saying, Ata, now, lech, go and I will be with your mouth. I'll be with the inability for you to speak. I'll be with you in that path. And what does the rabbi say? Or Achaim says, oh, wait a second. Couldn't God just heal him? I mean, he's the one that made the mouth, so he could heal him. Hashem was telling him, I can heal anybody. I'm the one that makes a mouth. I'm the one that makes people not hear or hear. But I'm choosing to send you even without the ability to speak. Because I believe that I am going to be with you. If it's what I command you, you will have the power to make this happen. So we all have inabilities, but there are things that we are meant to do in this world. We're not meant to just sit on the couch doing nothing. We're meant to achieve, live, push ourselves to our limits so that we feel good and that we feel happy, that we're living our fullest potential. And how do we do that? By knowing that I'm first doing the right thing and then going with it, even if I have an inability. I don't have that memory. I don't have that ability to speak, but it doesn't matter. This is what I need to do and I'll do it. So here is, and by the way, that's where greatness is shown. Why did God, by the way, want Moses not to speak? Anyone could think of an idea? Why would God want Moses not to be able to speak properly?
So we have a lesson.
Oh, so we have a lesson for life and to show Moses' greatness. And what's the lesson that we're meant to have from it? Well,
that everything is possible.
Anything is possible to try. Huh? If you take this lesson, if you take on a responsibility, you will have the power to take on the responsibility. Yes, imperfection can bring results. Here's another one. If Moses had the power to speak, we would all say it was Moses' power to speak that took us out of Egypt. Nice. But God wanted us to know that it's not up to Moses' power. It's not up to human power. It's Hashem that helps us, and that's what makes it happen. Okay, also, to destroy Pharaoh. To make Pharaoh realize, this is the kind of leader that beat you, right? This is the guy that took you down. That, yeah, Moses, a person that couldn't even speak, had the power to overcome, through Hashem, obviously, to overcome him who thought of himself as the greatest. They valued speech tremendously. And yet still, we were able to overcome them with a leader like Moses. Okay, if Moses, they say, if Moses would have gone to Israel, he would have been able to speak, we would have made him into a god. We would have said on Passover, it was Moses that took us. You know, on Passover, we don't mention Moses' name once. The whole Passover, not once in the whole Agadah, do we mention Moses' name. We mention Pharaoh's name. Not Moses' name. Why? Because it's Ani velo shaliach, God took us out, and not a messenger. So we also need to have the humility that when we achieve things, we need to know that it's not really us. It's because we took on the responsibility, we chose with our imperfection to take on the responsibility, and God was the one that helped us make it happen into a reality. Okay, anyone like this? Make sense? Okay. This is the speech that we give before when someone goes to a war, the king would stand up and he would scream. And there's a whole list of psukim that he would say. It's the most beautiful verses of the Torah that he would say. Al tiru, don't be afraid. You can do this. We are behind you. There's a beautiful prayer, a tefillah, that's actually said. And even today, the IDF would use these verses, these psukim, before they would go into war. So this is it. The idea that you have, if you're doing the right thing, you will have the responsibility, the power to do it. And you will regret it if you didn't. There's another thing that I wanted to say, very important. I wrote down here, oh, and I've spoken about this very, very many times. Why is it important for one to push himself and grow and say, I can do this? I can make the next stage in my life, whatever it is. Why is this so important? To make that leap into the next stage of your life. Why is this so important?
To grow.
Why is it so important to grow? Yes, to grow. Why is it so important to grow? The answer is because that's how you achieve real happiness. My friends, to be happy in this world is not somebody who has more things. It's not success. Success is a generic word. We don't know exactly what that means. In what? Success. In what? Normally today we define the word success in money. You succeeded in your career. You sold your app. And you made lots of money. Or whatever it is. That's success. That's how we define success. But that's not true. That is very untrue. I know many, many people, sadly enough. They have the most beautiful cars. More than they can ever drive. A person can only drive one at a time. They have the most beautiful house. Everything that you can imagine. They have more than one house. You can't live in more than one house at a time. But they have more than one. Everything that you can imagine. But they are unhappy. So success is not only money. What is success? What is true simcha? I wrote this down. True happiness is when you feel like you're expressing your highest self in the world. You feel like you're in the right life. In the right relationship. Doing the right job. Fulfilling a deep sense of meaning and purpose and higher calling within. Listen to this. One rabbi, Rabbeinu Bechaye, says that in Tehillim, in many other places, we say the word Ashrei. Ashrei means happy. But it means happy in plural. Ashrei is a plural word. It's not a singular word. Asher. Ashrei is happy in many ways. And he says like this. This is Rabbeinu Bechaye, one of the early writers. He says, happiness is in many areas of life. It's not just in one. You don't achieve happiness just because you were good at your job. Happiness is an overall thing where you are able to overcome your inner self and live to your fullest. Try, push yourself to your fullest. Right? It's being happy. You've got to be healthy. You've got to talk right. right? There's many areas you've got to learn. You've got to grow. There's many areas that happiness is expressed. It's true that happiness is about being content and happy with who you are. But where, who are you? Your inner self. And your inner self needs to be pushing to its fullest extent. It says, Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid. Happy is a person that's always worried, not anxiety. I know, this is, sounds like anxiety. Always worried that I could have done more. Actually, that is one of the ways you achieve happiness. Interesting. Everyone will tell you that's the way to get anxiety. That's the way to be depressed. But obviously, not in a way where it controls you, but in a way where you're always saying, what's my next stage? How can I do more? I'm happy with who I am, but I want more. I want to achieve more in this area. I could be a little healthier here. What's my plan for being healthier? What's my plan for talking better? What's my ta- And overall, a person becomes ashrei in many areas, in plural, not just in one area. And what is that? When your inner self is happy, when it's post- It says, Adam la'amal yulad. A person is created to constantly work. No matter what you do, you have to work. And what is the work? The inner work of always trying to overcome and being a better person today as than I was yesterday. Okay, so what's the theme of what I'm talking about? That when you work on yourself, you are given the ability to do, when you take on a responsibility, you're also given the help to make that responsibility actually come into fruition. So this is what Rabbi Ishmael said. He says that somebody who learns just to learn in itself, that's one area that someone can grow. Why does someone say to himself, I want to learn Torah? Why would I want to learn Torah?
To develop,
to grow. The Torah has wisdom in every aspect of life. And I wrote down a few areas, whether it's scientific, whether it's psychology, every aspect of life, the most random things, whether it's if you had a dream, what do you do with this dream? You're very worried about the dream. The Talmud says in Brachot 57a, Brachot Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, it says like this, that if you wake up and immediately after you wake up, you're worried, you had a dream, and then you forget it, that's most likely that wasn't a real dream. But if you actually remember it, and not only do you remember it, it's on your mind for the next day or two, that's a sign that it actually might be real. Okay? So there are many things. If you saw wine, if you saw a verse in the Torah, if you saw an elephant, if you saw every single type of thing that you can imagine, you saw it, a person, an animal. The Talmud says if you see a snake in your dream, what should you think? Bad or good?
Good.
It's good. What's the sign? Do you know?
Prosperity. The medicine's there.
Prosperity. You'll have it. Oh, that's good. The medicine is from Moses. But actually, the Talmud says, and I'll tell you why it says this, it's a sign that you're going to have money. You're going to succeed in money. Why? Parnasa. Why? Why the snake? Look, this is what the Talmud says. Tani tana kamei de Rav Sheshet. A rabbi say, this is a Talmud. That Talmud in Brachot gives a list of many different situations. If somebody sees a snake in his dream, he's going to have a lot of parnasa. And if in the dream the snake bites you, then you're going to get even more. It's like an extra blessing. Okay? And Rashi says something very interesting. Why is a snake the sign of blessing? For money. Hey, Brian, you might want to hear this. Why is it a sign for blessing for money? Rashi says, because the snake was told, Afar tochal kol yamechayecha. The snake was told that you're going to eat dust all your life. And for a snake, is that if that's your food, is that everywhere? Is it easy to get hold of? Huh?
Yes.
A snake? Avak. Afar. Dirt, earth, is what it eats all the time. It can eat other things also, but at the end of the day, it eats from earth all the time. Afa tochal kol yamechayecha. You just eat earth all your days of your life. Meaning, wherever you want it, it's in front of you. That's parnasa. What's parnasa? That it's in front of you. Right? What did someone say? We had a guy that spoke about finance, and he said, the ultimate way of making money is that you're financially independent. And he said, what's that? Where you don't have to do anything, things are done for you. That's the ultimate way of making money. Well, that's it. The snake has dust, earth in front of him everywhere you go. Actually, that was the curse that the snake got, that you'll eat earth wherever you go. So the rabbis say, why is that a curse? That's a blessing. If earth is our food, wouldn't that be awesome? I mean, it wouldn't taste good, but at the end of the day, that would be easy. No, there'll be no more hungry people. There's earth everywhere. Oh, I'm hungry. Okay. That tastes good. Why is that a curse? If food was so easy to get hold of, like dust, why is that a curse? The answer is, because when you don't have to work for something, it's a curse. When you're spoon-fed and you don't have to work for anything, that's the greatest curse. As a human being, our desire, we don't want challenges, but the fact that we have to work for things, that's what we love the most. If we weren't able to create the things that we create, we wouldn't enjoy life at all. Creation is actually a part of life. And being able to create ourselves with food, right, is a part of our life. That's a blessing. Anyway, so that was the curse of the snake. So just Talmud talks about everything. Here, science. We were talking about this, Dan, yesterday, so I'll mention this. Bacteria. When did we actually find the first bacteria? There's a guy called Anthony van Leeuwenhoek. I don't know how you spell that name. In 1667, he came up with the first microscope that's able to see bacteria. Listen to what the Talmud says. This is over 2,000 years ago. It's actually the Mishnah in Derech Eretz, in Chot Derech Eretz. Two different areas. One, it says that a person shouldn't drink from a cup and then give it to his friend. I do that in Kiddush, but whatever. Next time. Why? I just realized. Why shouldn't a person drink from the cup and give it to his friend? Mipnei sakana nefashot. Because it's dangerous. What do they say? Why? Maybe you're sick in your body. And it will go from your mouth to whatever's in the cup. And then your friend will also get that sickness. Can you believe this? Over 2,000 years ago. Also, with coins. Maimonides says, a person needs to be very careful with things like coins. Never put in your mouth. Because that carries bacteria. It goes from hand to hand. So that's something you should never put in your mouth. Interesting. Yeah, anyone got a question? Saying something?
I feel like in Shabbat, everyone always passes
around. Yeah, it's true. I'm thinking that the same. I'm like, oh no, yeah. Got to behave. Okay, COVID, you know. So listen to this. Another Talmud. The Talmud in Avodah Zarah. Shmuel says, right, if someone gets sick, are you allowed to heal him on Shabbat? Are you allowed to call the ambulance on Shabbat?
Yes, if he's a good friend, yes.
If he's a bad friend, it's like die. Pikuach nefesh. What does it mean he's going to die? Even if it's a mechush, if he's got a pain in his eye, that could be an infection that can go in his entire body. The Talmud says you can save him for that also. So what does it mean if he's going to die? Listen to this. Shmuel says that if someone was hit with metal, then you can desecrate Shabbat. Where? His hand, his leg, anywhere in his body. Even not something deep internal. If someone was cut with metal that we were into back in the day. Okay? So, there are many things like this. Pangaea. We always knew that there was one land originally. And this is the Lashon, the language of Zohar. Sheva Aratzot Hayu, there was seven different lands, Haya Eretz Achad, Venitavu Lesheva Aratzot. It was once one land, and it split into seven different lands. That's the continents that we have nowadays. And Pangaea is a relatively new concept in the end of the beginning of the 20th century. That's when we found out about Pangaea. Can you imagine? That everything was interconnected and all of the continents were connected. Stars. The Talmud in Brachot again says, listen to this. So the amount of stars there are, according to NASA, was only discovered because we went to the moon. Once we went to the moon, they had some kind of reflection that we were able to release or put there. And then scientists were able to see many more stars and see the exact ability of counting the stars of the universe to a certain degree. We know that there's more stars than there are grains of sand, just to understand how many stars there are. And it says like this. NASA has stars that are 10 to the power of 10, 23. That's 10 by 10 by 10 by 10 by 10, 23 times. Tremendous number. And the Talmud comes up to a very similar, few more stars than what NASA came up to. NASA's still working together. They're still going to get, one day they'll get to where the Torah is, but this is what the Talmud says. Not only do we say the number of stars, we give details. The mazalot, we're very into studying the stars. There are mazalot, which means different energies. You know, you're born in a different month. That's because you're born in an energy where the stars are closer or in a different direction. That has an impact on you. So there are 12 different mazalot, 12 different areas that the world or the entire Milky Way is split into. And each one of them have 30 legions, chelim, chel. And then each one of those chel, so 12, each one of those 12 has 30, and each one of those 30 has another 30 areas of stars. And each one of those 30 has another 30 rechaton, and they have another 30 karton, 30 gistra. And then in each one of these, you have 365, like the days of the year, multiplied by 10 million stars. Okay, so basically, when a person makes the exact calculation of how many stars we have, it comes out almost the same as the number that NASA has. Phenomenal. How? The Torah has wisdom in it that's beyond, not just in scientific knowledge, but beyond. Also, psychology. Sigmund Freud, was he Jewish? Yeah. Yes, not only was he Jewish, his father, check it out, his father was a Hasidic Jew. Now, that just to, like, let's take it to the next level. His father was actually a Hasidic Jew. And his grandfather wrote books. He was like a well-known rabbi. And it came out that his whole study is that there's three things, okay, that human behavior is influenced. I wrote this down because I don't know it. I know the Hebrew part, but not the English, right? He says human behavior is influenced by unconscious memory, thoughts, and urges. We actually act based on our urges, our thoughts, and unconscious memories, whatever that means. And he also splits it into three other ways of describing this. So this theory says that the psyche comprises of three aspects: the id, the ego, and the superego. And basically, it comes out that when he passed away, some of the people that knew him found many books of Zohar in his home. And in the Zohar, it says that basically the same concept, that we have three parts of where the neshama rests: in our thoughts, right? The id is the unconscious, which is basically our urges, our what we call the yetzer, the bala chayim, the animalistic part of your body. So it's your desire for food, for sex, for drink, for anything that's physical, okay? That's the id. And then the ego, which is the starting to be a conscious mind, the awareness that's happening, that's your emotions. And that's what we call the ruach. There's nefesh, which is in the body. Ruach, which is where the heart is, which is where your emotions are. This is all Kabbalah. And it's superego, which is what controls everything, really. If you really want it, it can control everything, is where the mind rests. And that's what we will call the neshama, where the neshama rests. So even though we have a soul, what does that mean? The soul rests in three parts of our body. One in the animalistic part of the body, one in the heart, and one in the mind. Nefesh, ruach, uneshama. So you see that it's beyond. It goes in all areas. The way that the world came to beginning, we said always that there was a bereshit, there was always a beginning, and no one agreed with that until very recent. In the past 2 centuries, did we come to the realization that this world actually had a beginning. But science didn't believe that originally. Okay, bereshit is a new concept, in the beginning. They believed in static state theory, which means that everything always was, never came to be. We believe in the Big Bang theory, and that means that there was a beginning. But we actually say, not only was there a beginning, there was what we call ex nihilo. Is that how you say it? That something comes from nothing. Okay, there is, in our mind, the physical, in our mind, anything physical needs something in order to exist. For instance, you have a brick. How is that brick made? Sand and water, you mix it together, you get a brick. Right? But for God, that's, where does the sand come? Where does the, that all comes from nothing. Nothing brought the something. And that's something that we always believed in. It's brought down many times in the Zohar, this concept of Yesh Me'ayin. The only thing that we as human beings can create from nothing is our thoughts. It's the only thing. That's why the minute we stop thinking, our thoughts cease to exist. Okay, so if you think of a chair, the minute you stop thinking of the chair, that chair that's in your mind ceases to exist. But if you made a chair, if you physically went and made a chair, then that chair, even if you walk away from it, continues to exist. Anything physical, if you walk away from it, it continues to exist. Why? Someone made this chair. Thank God it still exists. And it doesn't just make me land on the floor. Why does this chair still exist, even though someone made it? Because he didn't really make it. He just put pieces together. So anything physical that we make, we're putting pieces together. The only thing that we can actually make, that if we stop making it, it will cease to exist, is our thoughts. If you stop thinking, that thing stops to exist. That's because you are making that thought. And so too, for God, the entire world is like a thought for a human being. Obviously much more than that. But the entire world is like a thought. And if God will seize that thought, then the world will stop and would not exist any minute. In 1 second, it says, every second God creates the universe. Meaning, in 1 second, this entire universe can stop. Go back to nothing. Okay, just like turn off the screen. So, we are, and if you look at the people, I always talk about the story of a friend of mine, very close friend of mine, Rabbi Klatsko, who once someone came to him, and said, hey, you know, Jews, you're good at money. So he says, yeah, we are, but have you ever heard of Jewish doctors? Say, oh yeah, Jews in Hollywood? Oh yeah, I forgot about that. What about agriculture? You ever heard about the Jewish agriculture? You know, the stuff that we created in Israel? Drip irrigation? We're pretty good at that too. Right? He gave a whole list of things. It's the wisdom of the Torah that the Jewish people have for so many years that has made us come really good at so many things. Okay? So, why would someone study Torah? To become wise and understand the world. But then, there's another stage. And that's what we're trying to get to. There's another stage, which is... Oh, there's another thing I wanted to tell you. Very interesting. So, you know, we lose cells every day. Every day we lose brain cells, and those brain cells can never come back. Yeah, you get as you grow, as you come. Once you're a little kid, I know you can tell it's having an effect on me. But once you're a little kid, you grow a lot of cells until a certain age, and then they stop, and then they just die every day. More and more die.
That's
yes.
That's why I felt smarter yesterday.
Yep, that's why. Okay, but however, a new study came out and says that. If someone learns, and there's certain things that you can do, you can never recreate cells that you killed, like that died naturally, but cells can reproduce, regenerate cells. This is a new study that was done at UT Southwestern, and it's exactly what the Talmud says. This is what the Talmud says in the Mishnah in Kinim, okay, chapter 3, Mishnah 6. It says like this, it says that the elders say, of the Talmud, say, as long as someone gets old, da'atan mitarefet, the older someone gets, the more mixed up in his mind does he become. As it says, mesir safa l'ne'emanim, b'tam zekinim, as a person gets older, He loses his ability to talk and think. Right? Reason to reason. He loses his ability to reason. But people that have studied Torah, aval ziknei Torah, people that have studied Torah from a young age, and okay, it's not so. The opposite. It's like fine wine. As long as they get older, kol zman shemazkinim, da'atan mityashevet alehen, their mind becomes better. The cells in their brain actually become better. As it says, b'yeshishim chacha ve'orech yamim tfuna. As a person gets older, he becomes wiser. What's the point? The point is that the reason why someone could learn, it could be just for his own benefit. That's one stage. Learn, and you should learn, for your own benefit. So you become wiser, you understand the world better, you can deal with your challenges better. And a person needs to learn every day for his benefit. That's the first. But then we said, if you take on the responsibility to teach others, not only do you say, I want to learn, I want to help others as well. Oh, you will get the power to teach and learn as well. Not only will you get the power to teach and learn, but your learning will be much better. Let me ask you a question. If somebody studies in order to teach, yeah, why would he be able to study better? Why would that help you study better?
You have to explain it.
You have to explain it?
Sometimes you can understand something, but you can explain it, it means that you don't know the subject.
Exactly. You could say, oh, I understand, but being able to speak it and say it out, that takes much more effort. Also, if you're going to talk junk, they're going to call you out on it. I mean, no one does that to me, but whatever. Right? If you're going to talk out stupid stuff, someone's going to call you out on it. So what's the greatest level of studying? Not only for yourself, or doing things, not only for yourself, but also for others. When someone's able to study for himself in order to give to others as well, then the power of your study comes much, much greater. So. Sounds good? So that's one thing we said. But also, when you study to teach others, it needs to be deep in your heart. If you're going to give over something, you have to care about it. You could teach, but teaching can never be as powerful if it doesn't come deep from within your heart. It says, "Hayotze min alev, nichnas lalev." What's the worst kind of teacher? Does anyone know? Not only can he not speak and clarify himself and say the things right, but what's the worst? Doesn't care. It doesn't come from his heart. It doesn't live by the values that he teaches. So when it comes to sharing with others, the greatest level is when it's part of you also. And that's what the next thing that they said in the Mishnah. What do you learn? You learn also to do. To bring it into action. That's what he says. Learning to live by those values also. And we'll finish with this. If somebody says to you, people have told me this, I love Shabbat. Love it. I would love to bring Shabbat to my children. So what's my first thought? And what's my first reaction? Keep Shabbat.
Lead by example.
Lead by example. How are you going to do this? You're going to have a family, and you'll suddenly do Shabbat, just suddenly, just like that, switch onto Shabbat, and switch with your children and say, do Shabbat now. Well, you didn't do it when you were my age. And you're not doing it now. So why should I? It's never going to work. So the rabbis say that the best form of learning, of wisdom, is when you learn in order to do it also. Not just learning so that you can become wise. All the stuff we said till now was learning so you can become wise. But the greatest level of learning is that you can actually do it. Live by it. Okay? So when you learn, you discover also what it really is. For instance, without learning to do, you'll never know a lot of things. I'll give you an example. Shabbat. So someone says, I learn about Shabbat. I love the idea about Shabbat. I'm going to learn. I want to do it. It's beautiful. But there's another whole level. When someone learns with the mind to keep it. Okay, so he says to himself, what does it mean to keep Shabbat? Can you cook? Let's give you an example. Can you cook on Shabbat? Huh?
No,
shouldn't. So, question. What happens if you have tea leaves? Right? What happens if you have tea leaves? mint tea leaves, and you put it in a cup of hot water, which is coming out straight from the hot water urn. So on Shabbat, here on Friday night, you have some tea leaves in your cup and good mint, and you go straight to the water urn. You pour hot water into the tea, into the cup. Is that okay? No. Why not?
Because it's cooking.
You're cooking. Those leaves have never been cooked. By you pouring hot water directly into the cup, you're cooking the leaves. So that's why it's important for someone not only to learn about Shabbat, but to learn also how to do Shabbat. Because when you learn to do Shabbat, you'll learn a whole world of what Shabbat really is. And until that experience of learning what it is, you haven't yet fully done Shabbat. There are many examples. Did you know that if you have a mark on your jacket or your shirt, you might say to yourself, okay, let me just put a bit of water on it. That's fine. And then it'll be clean. Can you do that on Shabbat? No. Why not? Because it's washing. It's work. What's the work? It's one of the 39 melachot, which is washing. You're not allowed to wash on Shabbat. So if a person doesn't know, he'll, and you know, many times people come to me, Rabbi, your shirt's so dirty. I'm like, oh no, I don't have another one. All the others are, you know, creased and they don't look good. So I'd rather have this dirt than the crease on my shirt. So in Judaism, if you don't know how to do, then you won't know what it really is either. So that's why a lot of times people tell me, oh, I went to this class. Rabbi, do you mind if I study Kabbalah? What do you think about me going to a Kabbalah class? I say, no problem at all. I love Kabbalah. There's so much wisdom that we can learn and apply to ourselves from Kabbalah. But there's one catch. You got to make sure that the person is teaching you is really living by the values that they teach. It's kind of contradictory to say, oh, here's a list of all the Kabbalistic ideas, but the guy himself who's teaching it doesn't do Shabbat, doesn't do anything Jewish. So what makes that special? What makes that teaching special? You've got to be special by living to the values of what you teach. So that's why the greatest teacher is someone that lives by the values that he wants to teach over to others. Sometimes the greatest teacher doesn't have to say anything, but just by being so sincere about it, you can actually make the other person. So there's a story, there's a famous story of a guy that was in a yeshiva with the Chafetz Chaim about 100 years ago. He had a yeshiva and he grew up keeping Shabbat and then stopped, wasn't keeping Shabbat. He was in a yeshiva and he wasn't being so healthy for the yeshiva. So they told him that probably this place isn't for you anymore. You know, you're here for free rent. Probably not good for you here anymore because this is a yeshiva, and in a yeshiva, it's an environment where you study and learn and grow in Torah. And if you're not into it, then you don't have to be here. You know, we're not forcing you. So the Chafetz Chaim heard that they're telling this person to leave because of how he is. So before he left, the Chafetz Chaim said, "Please come speak to me." And the Chafetz Chaim sat with him and spoke to him and opened his heart to him. And at some point, the rabbi just started crying because of his love for this student. And at the minute that this person sitting in front of him saw the rabbi cry, was the minute that he realized how genuine he is about Shabbat, how genuine he is about his Judaism. And at that moment, the person said to himself, okay, I'm coming back. I'm not doing it. And he turned back in the right direction. So it's told that when somebody takes on a value, but he sees in front of him that the value he's taking on is actually done with sincerity. It's because I want to do it. Not just because I want to live by the idea because it's cool. Oh, I like Shabbat because that's cool. No, I actually like Shabbat because I want to live by the values because of the wisdom. I want to do it. I don't want to just like the idea. There's some people that go to their co-workers who are non-Jewish and they say, you know, I do Shabbat. We have something called Shabbat. So proud. This is my Judaism. But they themselves don't really do it all the time. And there's some people that go to their co-workers and say, I keep Shabbat. I really do. And from 5 in the afternoon, if Shabbat's sundown, I am not here. I'm not in my work. I go home. When someone sees that sincerity, that's when it passes over to the next person. That's when they're like, wow. But until then, it doesn't have as much weight. So wisdom isn't as great as the person that does it. The person that lives by the wisdom that we speak about is the one that's really the wisest of all. Right? So that's the idea. So this is the statement of Rabbi Yishmael. He said that when you learn to just learn, that's one stage. When you learn to teach, you'll get the power to teach also. And when you learn to do, you'll have the power to do, to teach, to live, to learn. People tell me, I can't do kosher. It's too expensive. So what? So you know what? You'll cook at home more. You'll be healthy. I can't do Shabbat. It's too lonely. So what? You'll get some friends. Go and make yourself actually have real friends. And then you'll do Shabbat with them. How about that? It's not, I can't do, it's too hard. If you do it, you will have the power and Hashem will give you the energy that you need in order to do it in the first place. So that's a true belief that we have, that when I put in my energy and I say, I can do this, as long as it's the right thing to do, you will have the power to do it. And it's important, if it is wise, then especially if you see the wisdom in it, then live by it. Don't just say, I want it for my children. Oh, I'm in this school, but I'll never want my daughter to be in this school. I've heard that before. And I say to myself, if it's not a place you want your daughter to be, then it's not a place that you should be either. I want this girl, I want this type of girl to marry me. So I say, well, is that type of girl going to be in the clubs every single night? No. So then why are you looking for her over there? Your wife isn't going to be there. Because that's not the type of wife you want. If it's the type of wife you want, no problem. Go there every night. You'll have a different one every night. But if it's not the type of wife you want, if you want someone that's going to be a mom to your kids, that's not the place you should be. You've got to put yourself in the place that you live by. Right? You've got to live by the values of what you really want. Anyway, so my blessing is to everyone that you should realize the power of a human being. Stop what?
Stop going clubbing.
Yeah, that's one of the messages for sure.
Start going to Ish
more. Yeah, we have some good clubs too. And kosher clubs. And kind of. So, I mean, I'm with my kids dancing to the music in the other room, so it's fine. But anyway, my blessing to you all is that you should have the power to understand and know that the more you take on, the more blessing you will have for those things that you take on. It says that when you have a spouse, you should honor her. Abraham honored his wife. And because of that, it says, "Va'kadosh baruch hu hitiv ba'avura." Hashem helped and gave good to, listen to this, says, I know, I thought I finished, but whatever. It says, this is what Hashem says to Abraham. God gave lots of good to Abraham. Why? Because of her. And he had cattle, donkeys, servants, shvachot, atonot, gmalim, you name it. Everything, all of the wealth that you can imagine, Abraham had. Why? Because of her. And what does the Talmud say? Why? Because of her? It says it's a message for all of us. A person should always respect his wife because you should know that your blessing comes to you because of her. As it says by Abraham, Abraham got good because of her. So, what does that mean? That when you take on the responsibility of marriage, you say, oh, how am I going to afford it? She's expensive. How am I going to afford it? And it says that God will bless you because of her. And that's the reason why you have to honor your children. And that's the reason why you have to honor your wife. When you have a child also, it says that you should feed your child before you feed yourself. It says you should feed your dog also before you. That's another thing. But it says you should feed your child before yourself. Why? Because they give you blessing. They are the cause of your food in the first place. And I could say, and many could say, that before a person takes on responsibility, you didn't have the means. Once the responsibility is taken on, you suddenly see that the means comes its way and it's a miracle. And that is a promise. Obviously, there are times where it's hard, it's challenging, but it would have been much more challenging otherwise. Just like with Moses, he was told, go and do it, but I don't speak. God didn't fix his speech. Sometimes it's not easy. But at the end of the day, you'll see at the end that you can do it and you'll be happier because you managed to achieve more. So don't just learn for yourself, learn to give to others. Don't just learn to give to others, learn to live by example. And by doing that, you will also pass it on to your children and to those with you as well. Okay? So that's the message of Rabbi Ishmael. Thank you for listening and joining.